Hello and welcome to a brand new series of Building Podcasts. It's really good to be back with you. I'm Jamie Harris, Building's Digital Editor. In this mini-series of podcasts, we'll be talking to three experts from across the industry and going behind the hype of some of the buzzwords in the built environment everyone is getting excited about. We've heard these phrases countless times, but where did they come from and what do they mean for construction in reality? This week, I'm talking to WSP's Matthew Marson about smart technologies. Okay, so joining me today is Matthew Marson, Head of Smart Places at WSP. Matthew, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Right, we're going to get behind the hype following on our podcast series. And for this episode, we're going to be talking about, it's not really a phrase, it's more of a word, smart. And you think everyone knows what smart is and why is the hype behind smart? But in terms of the built environment, when did the phrase smart start being sort of used?
Well, I think it was probably came around at a time when we were swapping over terminology from M2M to IoT. So okay. From machine-to-machine communications to the Internet of Things. And that basically means that you've got a set of devices or machines in a place that need to talk to each other across the Internet. And the idea is, knowing how that they would operate, you'd be able to do some clever stuff off the back of it. And clever to the extent that it became smart. And then we started to add in other things such as analytics, maybe some augmented reality stuff, and it became a catch-all term for the application of technology in the built environment. And because of that, it means everything, but also nothing, because everyone has a slightly different interpretation of what it means.
Okay. So, you mentioned a lot, incorporates a lot of things. Like you mentioned augmented reality, which I feel is quite a relatively recent phenomenon in this industry. Mm-hmm. But we go back to sort of machine-to-machine learning, I think you said.
The old name for IoT was M2M.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Even that's been rebranded.
Yeah, the IoT, Internet of Things, I particularly remember that coming in maybe sort of at the start of this decade. Maybe people started talking about the capabilities. And in reality, maybe 10 years ago, what were we talking about in terms of IoT? What kind of things were people getting excited about? Would you say?
I think it was just kind of normal sort of systems control, and the fact that you could give a device an IP address rather than using, a kind of old-fashioned analog control network. Okay. And then basically as web tech kind of improved, which is the sort of foundational technologies of lightweight databases or ways to transfer data with sort of high granularity over different sorts of connections, it meant that we were able to enable machines to talk in the same way that a web page might.
Right, okay. So, people are getting very excited about it now, and yes, even more so with even more capabilities. And in your day job as well, I've spoken with you before, Matthew, and I know how sort of enthusiastic you can get about the innovations that come across. But really, what do people often actually get wrong when they're trying to understand smart?
Firstly, they refuse to define it, which is a problem, because tech means different things to different people in different contexts. And I think a really good example is probably our iPhones. Although we've got exactly the same hardware, we probably do entirely different stuff on them. And the fact that I have a personal meaning to it, and it's the software that's actually changed its capabilities, or even sort of recognizing you don't have to buy a gadget to achieve a thing. You can basically just add a bit of software to it, update it, change the way that it works. If you've got, our phones still have the same antennas and screens, but somehow, we can play different games, different email clients, we can call, we can, take photos, and, what we do with those pictures or, sound bites or whatever is entirely different. And I think we kind of get lost in that in building sometimes, that you must have a point solution for a thing. The second one is, I think they probably confuse it with automation a little bit. And automation isn't new by any stretch of the imagination, and it doesn't require the sorts of technologies that we were talking about at the start. There are still ways to do that where you don't need to kind of unearth this whole digital landscape in order to get on with it. And then the third one that I see quite often is that people think that you can just buy it. And because you can just buy it off the shelf, that means that the risk is mitigated. But often what that means, I suppose it's a bit like a suit. If you buy a suit off a hanger, yeah, it does the job. But it's not exactly what you're after. And, you know, if it's not quite tailored to your exact body shape, you know, that's the difference between good and excellent. And often people are always striving for the best imaginable system, but yet aren't willing to go have that piece of code tailored to what they want to do.
Okay. So, yeah, I can understand that you might have some clients who might come and say, I want smart. I just want smart in my building. And, yeah, just give, like,
yeah,
give
do you
that
want three scoops.
Yeah. But for the built environment sector, which you work quite closely with, would you be able to describe what this essentially means? What do people really need to be thinking about when they're thinking about smart in the built environment in particular?
Okay. Firstly, I think there's a bit of a process to go on to actually, you know, define what it is for you. And sure. I always insist that our clients do something called an experience design, because often the brief is, this needs to be a smart building. This needs to be a smart campus. It should be a city with the smartest technology in it.
Right.
And that's as far as it goes. So the point of doing a kind of 6 weeks experience design basically helps you to attach yourself to the user and work out what are the set of services or capabilities that should be delivered that make that place do something special. So you start with a set of user personas, you might go test some ideas on some people, you'll come up with their journeys, and from there you're able to extract the different pieces of technology that will make that happen. So the sort of golden rule is, to start with, we don't even talk about tech. The how is not the hard part. Anything is possible with technology, but saying what you want can be quite challenging. So that's the first, that's, you know, a kind of process that I try to make our clients go on.
Yeah, and is that where you personally, and you and your team, would come into the process? You'd come in at that initial early stage of, you know, what do we want this building? What do we want to achieve?
Exactly. Okay, and we, you know, give a set of examples, and you sort of work through some business cases, because it's just so different to people's normal day jobs if they've been used to delivering built environment assets, that it can sometimes feel a bit alien. And the sort of things that I try to challenge them on why you need to go with smart is that, I suppose, if I have three things as to why, the first one would be insight. It needs to be able to tell you something about your asset that you simply can't Google, or that you can't just do a survey on. It needs to be data that a machine is good at capturing.
Could you give me an example of maybe one of the ways in which, you know, those examples that you say, something you can't Google?
Oh, so that would be, you know, what do people think when they come to a co-working space? What is the air quality level, particularly, you know, in this room? Or how has a set of changes we've made to the way that the building's air handling system works means we've reduced sick days?
Okay.
So you can Google a set of, like, high-level stats on it,
yeah.
But you know, you need those sensors there to actually prove it, and that integration in to take that data from someone's timesheets. To know if they've been ill or they haven't. The second one, I think, would probably be around on things being more complicated than just a standard integration, something that's highly data-driven. So a very simple example could be, you want the rooms to adapt to whether or not people are actually there. And often you get a set of ghost meetings that happen in people's workplaces. They will book a meeting room and then never actually turn up. So if a sensor in a room knows that there's nobody there, they can set back the HVAC, they can switch off the lights, and then they can re-release the room onto the room booking system. So normal controls could do part of that, but the complication comes to when you have to talk back to a room booking application.
Mm.
And the fact that, you know, the machine can also talk to the piece of software is the clever bit. And then my third and final one would probably that the services that you deliver and you put into a person's hand have to have some kind of meaning or a fun. At the end of the day, we're people.
Yeah.
So a couple of examples I can give you for that one is we built, as part of some of the interactive screens that we were putting around the building, which spoke about, you know, live utilization, so that you could, you know, sort of choose where I wanted to go for a quiet call or where it has got the best vibe or something. We did something called the Wheel of Stuff, and the idea was you would put a filter on if you wanted culture, drinks or coffee, fitness. You spin this sort of big thing like the Wheel of Fortune, and it connects to the Google Maps API to pick out something for you and your team to go do locally.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's still, you know, related to places and things, but we just tried to make a bit of fun.
So, I mean, we've talked about sort of in buildings as well, but you also, when we've spoken in the past, you've looked at sort of the wider, I want to call, you know, placemaking, wider sort of, you know, smart cities, which, again, is a massive buzzword and buzz phrase, and people get really hyped up about smart cities. But in reality, what does that mean?
What is a smart city?
What is a smart city?
Oh, well, is that, obviously you'd have to do an experience design. But,
of course.
For me, it's about how a citizen has an improved quality of life as a result of a set of data-enabled services. So, for instance, one of the questions we had from a mayor of an American city was, how could I increase my tax revenues? And it wasn't a purely, you know, just give me the money. Yeah. It was about making a set of investments to make the place more livable. So, you know, the whole kind of point of why they wanted to use technology was so that they could streamline a set of efficiencies, but then also make it a better place to be. You know, what if you could set up a business in three clicks? That means your city can deliver on, you know, all of its kind of ambitions around the startup community. Or what if, you know, paying off bills or being able to, you know, vote for the next big investment that the city makes, having that set of digital infrastructure is really important. And when you combine that with a set of censoring, then it's also a data-driven decision rather than a sentiment one.
Okay, so you've worked on some really interesting sort of smart technologies and how, you know, they've been put to use in the built environment, in buildings. Are there any sort of particularly poignant examples that sort of immediately come to mind for you that you got really quite excited about?
Oh, I think so. I did one for a bank. They had a fintech centre, and I'd sort of brought them to show one of my projects because they didn't really believe my PowerPoint. And they sort of said, all right, then, if you're so good, why don't you come and fix productivity at our fintech centre? Mm. And I was like, okay. So went along, sort of, you know, met with the team there and sort of worked out what the place was all about. And employee productivity is probably, you know, the holy grail to sort of real estate. And if you can prove that a particular design move in a building will lead to X percent, you know, more words read a minute or bits of software released or whatever, that's really quite powerful for a business. So in this particular context, what we'd worked out was that productivity was made up of three things. The first one was innovation, the second was collaboration, and the third was efficiency. So in the innovation category, that basically boiled down to the number of patents filed or number of projects that they'd sold out of that centre. Nothing we could really do anything about, but it was something that we could certainly measure using the company's ERP. The second was around collaboration, and the client really hated the idea that he was paying rent for people to come and sit and email each other. It's like, well, you can do that from home. If you're coming into the office, you know, get up and talk to each other. Mm. That's literally the point. So we used some spatial analytics across the Wi-Fi access points. So, you know, when you're walking down the street and you're on a phone call and you hop between mobile masts and you don't even notice, it was a similar principle. So we changed the stickiness of the access points so that we could basically triangulate where one of the corporate mobile phones was connected. And we could basically see the movements of those devices and which team they were a part of. So if it looked like people from different teams had had some kind of meaningful interaction by a meeting that they'd gone to or the way that they'd, you know, stopped and spoken to each other about something, we increased that team's coefficient of collaboration, which was a kind of score we'd derived about how much, you know, they're getting up and talking to each other. And we basically found that the teams with a higher collaboration score were delivering more in innovation. They were, you know, filing more patents, they were delivering more projects. And so we basically had the data to go change the bonus structure. So it was, you know, we actually rewarded people for that. And then the third one, for efficiency, it was a kind of running joke there that the temperature was just never right. So as part of the workplace app we built them, you could vote for a change in temperature. So it would pick you up on the beacons as to like your location, and then it would talk straight back to the building management system, which is that computer in the basement of a building that deals with all the temperatures on the different machines. So it'd kind of do that automatically, so a person didn't need to get involved. But the clever thing that the client wanted to do was take the amount of time that somebody had spent on that screen, times it by their day rate, add it all up and go fine the incumbent facility manager that much for wasting his people's time just by not being able to meet set point. And it was probably around $2,000 a day.
Crikey, really?
Yeah, just because they couldn't get the temperature right. So all those things sort of, you know, added up to a picture that because of how we've used existing technology, we really didn't have to fit much actual physical stuff. We were able to kind of prove that, you know, collaboration delivers more for the business, and we could reward that behaviour. And it was something that's not Googleable.
Yeah.
You know, you could probably find out that, you know, company X says that if you do Y thing with collaboration, it will lead to result Z. But we're, I think, a bit nervous of trusting those sorts of things. And with this example, we've proved it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I appreciate that we're still developing some of this potential. But what's next for smart technology and in terms of getting, you know, the wider industry more interested and more involved in it? And, yeah, what's next?
I think let's get the basics right first. Mm. And we often, I think, get too caught up in the hype, the glitter of it all, and we just haven't got the fundamentals sorted. So I would challenge organisations, particularly with the big focus on zero carbon at the moment, just to get the sort of energy stuff in line. And I would recommend to folks that they go and look at a set of analytics capabilities to whip their building management systems into shape. So the idea of this is that you extract all of the points data you've got from the various machines across your building, from that single point, the building management system, upload it to a cloud scale analytics service. And I have not yet seen an implementation where people don't do things as simple as simultaneous heating and cooling, basically using boilers and chillers to mix what is effectively outdoor air temperature anyway. It's also really good in kind of looking for those low or no capital expenditure energy conservation measures that you can make, and can often predict when faults are going to arise on a piece of machinery. And where this is different from some of like the snazzy systems that the current manufacturers are trying to sell is that to get that sort of an insight, you do need something that's cloud scale in order to crunch the numbers. A PC in your basement that has a flashy user interface is simply just data visualization. It doesn't have all of those algorithms and, you know, the just brute force behind running the calculations. So BMSs are really good as like an alarm clock to tell you some times and some temperatures and to go off when things have gone wrong, but it's not the same as comparing it to design intent in real time. So I think that's the first step. And when I've seen people do that, they get anywhere between sort of 5 and 25% energy savings and about 5 to 10% in their maintenance. So I think that's a good message to sort of prove that on your smart journey, this is the right thing to do. And perhaps some of those savings help to pay for your investment for what I think the next step is, which is to look at how space is being used. I think there's often a lot of complaints, particularly in workplaces. Oh, we don't have enough meeting rooms. There's not enough places to collaborate. When in fact, there probably is. It's just a very poorly managed, and you need some of that real-time data to pull that off. So you know, just a set of occupancy sensors can actually dispel a lot of myths that an organisation has about how they use their space, and you know, with the right sort of management team, you can do something about that. And I think when you've got your energy and your space in line, then that's when the kind of big prizes start to come, and you can focus on things like health and well-being. I think a lot of us speak about the WELL standard and what it's supposed to offer, but I've not yet seen anybody really prove it in their space other than through getting a badge on the door. I want to see right now, do I have, you know, the silver, gold or platinum level of air quality or daylight, or you know, what is the canteen actually offering versus that standard? And why we don't have that sort of in the foyer on the screen, if you're so proud of your badge, kind of perplexes me. Prove it. And then the second one would be then around things to do with productivity. Yes, it's different for every organisation, probably every department and probably an individual. Yeah. But there are things we can do to start chipping away at those common bugbears like lift wait times, Wi-Fi dropping, you know, loos being cleaned at the wrong time. There are all these sorts of efficiencies that we can do. And probably the last one is a bit of fun. A workplace app might not be the right answer in some cases. I think we might find in sort of half a decade's time that having a workplace app is just a bit embarrassing. Yeah. And in fact, think about if you want to deliver those sets of services, how could they be like atomized in a way that it's part of an app that people already have meaning to. So let's say, you know, you're a particularly fancy organisation, you've got a great canteen and you want to do an internal workplace delivery. Well, why don't you put it on delivery and use a set of beacons so that the internal staff are part of that? You know, I already know how to use Deliverer. I don't want to have to download something else and, you know, the UI to be clunky. These organisations have invested in that because that's their core business.
Yeah.
Just give them some train tracks to run that stuff over. I think we've got an exciting future ahead, so let's not get caught up in all of, you know, the big data cloud analytics, AR, VR in the cloud, you know, all those buzzwords that add up. Yeah. Just start with things. You know what? Give it a go. I think the biggest problem we've got sometimes in the built environment is that the way that our contracts and stuff are set up, and given, you know, that if accidents happen, they kill people, it's not okay to experiment, but it's just software. If it doesn't work, do a re-release.
Mm.
It's going to be okay.
Reassured us. That's great. Matthew, if people want to learn more about SMART, I hear there's a podcast that they can listen to. It's just about that.
Oh, yes, at WSP. I was basically having the same conversations on loop, so I decided to record them. So if you go to our website, which is smart-simplified.com, and click thinking, I've got a set of sort of 30 kind of 10-minute conversations where I've spoken to, like, you know, the head of smart cities at Siemens, or the Watson IoT leaders talk about platforms in buildings. We even spoke to an ethicist from Cambridge about what if buildings make their own decisions and what do we have to plan for there. So it's quite a comprehensive set of stuff that I hope's helpful for people when they come to tackle this sort of a problem.
Well, Matthew, thank you very much for breaking down and getting us behind the hype. But thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this building podcast. As ever, please do let us know your thoughts and feedback on these podcasts by leaving a rating and review on iTunes or by emailing building@building.co.uk. We really do appreciate all of your feedback. You can listen back to all of the episodes of this building podcast series, as well as our archive of podcast episodes, by going to building.co.uk/podcasts or by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks once again for listening. I've been Jamie Harris. Until next time.